It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
In my completely lack of professional opinion, I think we're going to get this game in tonight. And I hope so, because the Tigers are going to do... the Tigers have this... the bullpen day. This is your day. All right, you got Schneeman's Demons at the bottom, the 1-9. Give it to me. I think we actually need to be paying attention to the fact that Schneeman has played short more often than not since the All-Star break ended. And I wonder whether we're just going to do like a rotating cast, whether maybe Gabe Arias gets another chance, whether Angel Martinez gets another chance, or whether this is just all, hey, everybody gets one last crack at it before we move Andrés Giménez to short.
So who's getting moved?
Well, I mean, I think Rocchio goes to AAA, and then maybe you feel more comfortable defensively about Angel Martinez or Schneeman every day at second base. You really like when I say Schneeman, by the way.
You know, you light since up. Day one I have.
Yeah. Yeah. And like when I do the Schneeman's Demons, you get very animated. You like smile. You're just naturally happy.
I am.
You are. You're just a naturally happy guy.
Yeah. I just, you know, just frankly, when we're talking baseball, it just makes me excited.
You're a baseball guy. And you don't run from it. And by the way, the 5 at 5 was brought to you by Slater and Sirs. Experience you need, results you want. I'll just ask you. You're panicking, right? And I'm saying it. That's a statement.
Well, it's funny because I'm not panicking. However,
he kind of called me out for being a homer earlier because I'm not panicking.
No, but I don't want to jam you up.
Jam me up. Jam away.
Can I jam you up?
Jam away.
I mean, you said you're not panicking.
Mm-hmm.
However, you did say tonight's the game. If they don't win tonight, you're going to be a little nervous tomorrow.
No, I mean, I think the conversation's evolving. I think this is the series where with every game, if they take the next three games, guys, we should all stand down. If they take two of the next three games, okay, you salvage this series. If you lose two of the next three games, or God forbid you get swept by Detroit, yeah, panic is probably right. Listen, we heard what Austin Hedges doesn't come out with a manifesto like he does last night if there isn't a little bit of concern in the Guardians clubhouse. We've already heard about the emotions, the attitude after the loss last night in the clubhouse. We also have a lineup out there today that looks a little different than it has, including bumping David Fry to the cleanup spot when that's been Josh Naylor's spot. They've moved, like Hosey's periodically been the two hitter. And, you know, you've had different guys from the 7-9. You've had guys move around. By and large, Josh Naylor has been the four hitter all season long. So clearly, Stephen Vogt's trying things. So he can say kumbaya. He can say, yeah, wait, we just got to keep doing what we're doing as much as he wants. He's trying to do things to jumpstart the lineup. But I still think you have time to stave off that concern. Because the concern right now is the Twins and Royals all of a sudden are four games back. The concern is you're falling off the pace for the number one seed, which, hey, you know the easiest way to make the ALDS? Getting the number one seed. So I can't remember if it was Jason or Anthony of the Morning Boys earlier today that said, I'm concerned, I'm not panicked. That's where I am. But with every one of these games, this tonight is as close to a must-win game as it gets on July 23rd. How about you?
I don't know that tonight's the must-win game. I don't know that last night was the must-win game. I do think you got to find a way to continue to keep your lead in the AL Central. Like that to me seemed like a foregone conclusion. They were just going to win it easily, and things have just sort of changed as teams have gotten hot. later in the season. And no one's really talking about those teams. So I feel like they've kind of slid under the radar and have won a bunch of games and have just really kind of sort of put on the pressure on the Gardos.
I think you can make a case that the Twins and Royals are two of the only teams right now. And the Astros are also playing great baseball. But there's like
in the American League?
There are three teams in the thick of it within the top seven or eight seeds that are playing really good baseball right now. And it just so happens to be the two teams behind the Guardians in the division. But, you know, like, I mean, I think there's a conversation to be had. Even though the Guardians are, what, 19 games above 500, is there a point before the deadline, and we've got about a week to the deadline, is there a point that maybe the Guardians feel like they should be less aggressive? I don't think there should be. I think the point is, you've got a Schneid. I think adding the right players is going to inject some energy and some life into that clubhouse. There's nothing that can happen for me between now and the deadline that will change that. Yeah, I think you should go try and get Pete Alonso. And if not Pete Alonso, go talk to Tampa Bay about Randy Arozarena and Zach Eflin. Okay, well, if not those guys, I'm going to talk to Toronto about any one of their pitchers, not named Yusei Kikuchi because he's a scrub-ass bum, but one of the other guys, and whether it's Bichette, whether it's Vlad Jr., any one of their guys who even gives you some impact of a bat, go talk to them about that. I wonder if the Guardians do maybe feel differently, though. I wonder if they're gauging, like, I do, like, for instance, Schneeman at short since the All-Star break, that is 100% a, we got to see if we got to give him a little sustained run there to see if we trust him there. He's been our super utility guy. How do we feel about him every day defensively at short? Angel Martinez being in the outfield when he could be one of the guys that kind of holds down second base if you want to move Jimenez. Like, I think John Kenzie Noel getting another run in the outfield. I think these are all, hey, this is your chance kind of moments for those guys. But I wonder if whether it's those guys performing or, I mean, hell, worst case scenario, you could be looking at the deadline being in second place in the division. I do wonder if that changes the Guardians' approach, meaning Chernetti, their approach to the aggressiveness at the deadline. I think they'll make moves no matter what, but I wonder if it changes the scale of the moves that they've make or they will make.
So where are we at now? Like, if the season ended today, where do you think Chernetti's at? Where are they at?
Well, they wouldn't have made a move.
Oh, okay, excuse me. Deadlines today? That's what I
think
meant
deadlines
to
today, I think you go swing big. And I think you make multiple big swings. I think this is 2016. I think whether your big swing's Andrew Miller, whether it's Pete Alonso, or whether it's John Lucroy, or whether it's a Crochet, or Jack Flaherty, or a Chris Bassett, you know, whether it's an ace in a good bat or whether it's a Arozarena, whatever it is, I think you're going to see them make multiple big swings. Because here's the thing. I want to say it was Baseball America put out their revised top 100 list. The Guardians now have seven players in the top 100. That means that you have, like, if you've got seven guys in the top 100, it means you're doing something right. It means your farm system is seen as one of the best in baseball. I think that gives you some extra value here that you can play with, knowing you also have the number one pick that is you can't trade, so he's going to be the bell of the ball of your minor league system going forward. How about you?
In terms of what? Like what
yeah,
I
like
want?
If the deadline was today.
Man, I'd like that Pete Alonso thing.
Here's the thing. This one isn't as good. Paul Goldschmidt. If St. Louis...
Is he like 40?
He's up there. He's not 40.
I mean, he still's got power. I mean, yeah. dude came out the womb with power.
I really like that.
Yeah.
That's like sassy Dustin Fox giving me some baseball takes. Can you give me any other takes, just baseball takes in general, just with that sassiness? Because in fairness, I'll give you a second to think about it. I think this is what baseball coverage is missing, a level of sassiness. Like, there's dry, like, Meisel. Little dry, a little sarcastic, a little smug, right? As a matter of fact, most baseball reporters in general, there's a why are you asking me this question kind of vibe to them. But we don't have anybody that's sassy. Think about it.
I'm going to think about that. So what do you want me to say? Like I don't want to let you down.
Well, no, you won't let me down. I just want to see if you can reinvent the sassy baseball take. I wouldn't trust Brian Rocchio with a can of corn. Something like that. Yours was still better than mine, because I'm not the sassy baseball guy. I'm snarky. It's totally different.
I got to think about it, man. I'm on the spot.
There's no better time than right now. I think Van Halen sang that.
I got nothing for you, dude.
You're like Rocchio.
I'm just trying to keep...
At the plate in the second inning yesterday. Just a 97-mile heater right down the plate, and you just watch it go by. There's also a conversation earlier in the show that I didn't realize I was working with shoe sniffers. And that Dustin and Keith, when they get a new pair of kicks, they take a big,
whiff of
their new shoes. As a matter of fact, they were sniffing each other's shoes earlier.
Dude, I can tell you right now.
You both have brand new shoes on.
Before you even ask our next guest, I can tell you his answer right now.
All right. What do you think it is?
I think he's on Team Fox in Britain.
Are you calling Dan Orlovsky a shoe sniffer?
100%.
All right, let's see. Let's go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on former NFL quarterback, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky. Have we besmirched your good name when Dustin Fox says you are a shoe sniffer?
You've held up my reputation properly. I absolutely am. There's probably a couple parts to this. First of all, good to be with you guys. Hopefully summer's amazing. I love the smell of new things in general, and I think the things that stand out when they're new are new car, new pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the beginning point of it for me. The second thing is, and maybe this is a little bit central to athletes, but there was always like a weird sense of you're a sicko / pride that your shoes would start to smell so bad, because you would sweat so much working mm-hmm. out. So that's probably why there's a little bit of a shoe smelling intrigue on my end.
I also think too, Dan, being an athlete our whole lives, and this is, you don't have to be a pro athlete to have experienced this. You could just be a high school player. Like, we're always so busy and always on the go with sports every single day, multiple times a day sometimes.
You just have to sniff some shoes.
The sniff test of like clothing and shoes and things sort of becomes like, okay, is it need washed or are we gonna run it back? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It just becomes like part of the fabric.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a little bit unique to locker room and all that stuff, and probably dudes instead of girls, candidly. I don't know. There's like that weird sense of pride that's attached to it. So I actually smelled Molly's shoes on national TV once. Molly made a bet last year with Stephen A. about UConn and the national championship, and UConn won. He had to buy her a brand new pair of shoes, and she wore them on TV. And she was like, I got my new pair of shoes today. And I was like, let me see them. And she gave them, and I smelled them just because they were like super expensive. Like, do they smell like more money than other shoes?
Yeah.
So I asked Dustin this earlier. How, like, what can you describe the difference in like a high end pair of shoes, new kicks versus like, I don't know, the $30 brand I'm going to get at the local store?
Dude, I feel like Jays have a different smell, man. Like new Jordan,
like
something about them.
Describe it though. Can you guys describe
it? It's intoxicating. It really is.
It smells like, you know, like you got a expendable income.
You got
sure.
money. So, it smells like money. 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't necessarily know because I'm not a fancy shoe person, but there's definitely a difference.
Shoe sniffer Dan Orlovsky on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Do the Browns pass the smell test this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you make the case that that's as good a roster top to bottom as there is in the AFC. You know, the only rosters that you'd probably really try to go neck and neck with would be Houston's roster has gotten very good, and it is very good, and Kansas City's, you know, because of, you know, the depth that they have. So, you know, we've talked about this for a couple years with Cleveland, and obviously it really rang true last year in the way that they were capable of playing and the run that they went on. But there's not really a weakness. You know, the defensive line is very good. The back end is one of the best in the league. Their offensive line, very good. Their wide receiving core is, you know, with Coop back, is
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
So a strength, Tillman, you know, did some really nice things last year. The tight end position, Njoku really stepped forward. Obviously, if Nick comes back and is Nick, so you can make the case like maybe at inside linebacker. Josh was really good last year. So even there's just not a ton of flaw on the football team. And ironically, the biggest question mark on the football team is the most expensive player.
Big news today here for the Browns. They have restructured Amari Cooper's contract. He's going to get paid some extra cash this year. It essentially still just a, you know, the same contract that it was, which means he'll become a free agent in March after the season. How do you see Amari fitting into this offense? You know, we've got a new coordinator here in Ken Dorsey. I know you study a ton of tape and you've seen what he's done in Buffalo. I'm curious how you think his offense, you know, sort of evolves with Deshaun Watson and these guys, Amari, yeah, and Njoku and Nick Chubb. I mean, all these weapons here. What should we expect?
I hope that Kevin and the heart of this offense remains that way. I think that's when it's at its best. You know, Coop is still one of the best chunk wide receivers in the league. You know, he can still one-on-ones, and obviously he can still be very good when it comes to routing guys up, but he's really started to develop into a high level play action pass chunk wide receiver. You saw that with Joe last year. And you know, the really interesting thing with the offense, and again attached to Deshaun, is, you know, Kevin Stefanski's offense has, you know, that Gary Kubiak tree foundation, and they got away from that a little bit to the start of last year with Deshaun. It was less play action, it was less effective, and a little bit more spread out, and that's what Deshaun has always been comfortable with. And then, obviously, the injury, and Joe comes back, and it's more. So, I don't know who's going to win that conversation, because that's not Ken Dorsey's background. You know, one of my complaints last year with Ken in Buffalo, who I think is a really good football coach, was they didn't do enough of that. And when they did it, Josh was so good. And it was way too predictable schematically. There was way less and way too little pre-snap motion. And there was an element of you weren't ever gaining an advantage to the defense. And so hopefully he's learned from that and steps into a little bit more of doing things the way that they've done it in Cleveland under Kevin for a little bit of time now. But I still hope that this remains Kevin Stefanski's play-action pass, run-centric offense.
Dan, when it comes to Deshaun Watson, I do not believe this, but there have been a fair amount of analysts, there have been a fair amount of even Browns fans, you know, national NFL fans who look at Deshaun and say he'll never be the guy he was in 2020 or 2019 again. Do you feel that that is more likely or not to be the case, or do you think there's still a healthy chance we see the Deshaun Watson the Browns traded for?
I think it's more likely that Deshaun and that time that he had in Houston is the best that we will ever see him, and that he is who he's been in the last, I guess, 2 years. And that obviously is really difficult to say, because I was as big a fan of that player on the field as I was of anybody in the league. I think that there's a couple factors attached to it. Number one, Deshaun over the last three seasons hasn't shown us that he is what he was in that stretch in Houston, shoot up until that 2020 season. I think, too, is Deshaun does have some significant injuries of his past. I think he's torn his ACL at least two times, if not three. Obviously, the injury of last year. At some point, you know, I think he's going to be 29 this year, if not 30. So, you know, the injuries along with the wear and tear and the age add up, and they just make you a little bit lesser. So do I think he can get back to playing at a high level and where you consistently see performances like he had in that second half versus Baltimore last year? I think he can get to that. Do I believe that Deshaun is going to lead the league in passing again and be one of those top five quarterbacks? I wouldn't bank on that.
So we were having a conversation earlier, Dan, about Myles Garrett, and we heard today from Mike Vrabel, who's on the staff. I've asked our other guests today about this, too. I'm curious your thoughts. You know, Vrabel's here. You think he could provide some insight as to using Myles as a tight end around the red zone?
Oh, my gosh, man. I mean, why would you not find a way to just make sure that that human being's on the field as many football snaps as possible? So I think, you know, I've always been such a big Vrabel guy. I think many are. When you sit in production meetings with that guy, you get blown away by how good he is, how smart he is, how detailed he is, and you gain a great appreciation for it. So I think he's only going to bring, you know, a whole new level of thinking and you know, creativity and a different way about him. And so, I mean, I think there's multiple people on that roster. It goes back to the health of the roster that they can find different ways to use. And I think you have certainly a coach in Stefanski that's creative enough. So I would love to see Myles Garrett catch a touchdown, man.
So with that, you mentioned, you know, the way people think about Mike Vrabel around the game. You go into this this season with coaches on the hot seat, and there are three coaches, yeah, either with Super Bowls or with a lot of clout on their name: Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, and Pete Carroll. When this season's over, which one of those coaches do you think is going to be the most sought-after head coaching candidate of those three experienced guys?
Oh, Mike Vrabel. You know, with Coach Belichick, obviously, the track record speaks for itself. And I don't know, you know, Coach Belichick, he might fall in love with being on the TV side of it. And, you know, that might be his decision thing. Pete Carroll, you probably can still coach at a pretty high level, but there is a little bit of a dice roll to that. And you have to just be very aware. And that's going to take a very unique situation. Coach Vrabel can flat out coach. And I think that once you get into, you know, a year away, and people can certainly appreciate after he's maybe removed for a year what he was able to accomplish in Tennessee and the run that they went on, you're going to see people go, oh, no, this guy's one of the best coaches, one of the best leaders, one of the best communicators that we have around the NFL game. And I think that that'll be an easy, highly sought after decision.
Reports out of Washington, Washington Post report this today. They believe the NFL will go to 18 games relatively soon. Who knows if it's next year or the following year or the year after, but it seems like we're headed that way. Dan, is this a good idea?
I don't think so, but I think it's inevitable. Did you see that each team made like $400 million last year, $400+ million? I mean, the amount of money that is just attached to the NFL right now for a couple different reasons, I understand it from the business element of it, owners-wise. I get it, and the owners realize, okay, we can trade away some off-season stuff, or we can trade away some preseason stuff. Because, Dustin, you know this, like, there's a couple things that players just truly dislike. One is the off-season, especially as you get older. You know, like, older players just don't like it. And then two, the preseason games. So those older guys that are really deep into the negotiations as NFLPA reps and whatnot, you're carrying two of the things that they're so willing to get rid of. And I think the owners are sitting there going, well, again, we just want to make tons of money as they are. So they're going, well, if you guys really want to dislike the offseason or, you know, the length of it or preseason, sure, we'll get rid of it. Give us an extra game. And for older players, you're like, wait, My offseason will be longer. I'll play in less preseason games. It probably secures my roster spot a little bit greater, and I'm going to make more money for sure. I just think it's going to negatively impact the development of young players.
Dan, great stuff, man. You're always fun to have on air. You're always a good sport. We appreciate it, buddy. And rejoice because football's back.
I appreciate you guys. Always a pleasure to be on. Let's not rush football, though. Like us who have to do the football every day when it gets back, I can still enjoy a little bit of summer, you know? So let's not rush it.
Can you tell the producer, Keith Britton, that? Because he's trying to kill summer as quick as he possibly can.
Nah, Dan, man. Yep. Hang on. Don't let him do it.
Damn right. That's a good man right there.
Dan, I'll see you in a couple weeks in Bristol.
Yes, sir. Good day. Hear your voice, bud.
All right, man. You too, buddy. See you soon.
Dan Orlovsky on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.